Gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in cold, dreary Northwest Pennsylvania. Folks, we broadcast live every weeknight, Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. You know the drill. We're simulcast on BTR, Blog Talk Radio. You can watch us live by archive on our YouTube channel. Links to each audio and video venue, of course, are located at HagmanandHagman.com. We're doing a little housekeeping with respect to HagmanReport.com. However, it's up and running. And I do want to mention, HagmanandHagman.com, show information. Show and show information. Simple, right? HagmanReport.com, news, articles, breaking news, insights, analysis. And then for my musings, HomelandSecurityUS.com. That's HomelandSecurityUS.com. Three websites, three portals of information. And, of course, folks, I would just want to just say thank you so much. We're broadcast live on the Global Star Radio Network. They do a fantastic job getting our voices out there, making us sound good even when we don't. Well, that's at least for me. And, of course, booming all across the United States, North America, Central South America, worldwide, actually. And I'm Doug Hagman, as you know, at the helm with fellow investigator, researcher, and my son, Joe Hagman. We are the Hagman and Hagman Report. And just great to have each and every one of you as listeners, as viewers, as part of our family. Portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by nuts.com. That's nuts.com. Have you gone there yet? Oh, what a great website. What an easy to navigate website. And even better still, what great products. You want some, well, you want some nuts? It's the place to go. Use our microphone code, HH, our code in the microphone box, HH. That's nuts.com. Enter our code, HH, in the microphone box for a very special free offer. More on that later. Joe, busy day here at the studio.
Yeah, it was.
Eric the Tech was just, I'm telling you, he scares me.
It was a very busy day. Lots of stuff going on. Getting the next week schedule, getting the ball rolling on that, as well as working on the rest of this week. We have joining us tonight from 8 to 10 will be Pastor Paul Begley. He has a show, The Coming Apocalypse. You can go to paulbegley.com for his website.
Yes.
And we will be on his show tomorrow from 1 to 3 p.m. In the afternoon, and he's coming on tonight, so that'll be fun as always.
See, we held him hostage. We said, you want us on tomorrow, you're going to have to come on tonight, and we held him, we actually duct taped him to the chair. Actually had one of our Vatican assassin Jesuit spies go out there and duct tape him to the chair. Yeah, anyway,
so looking forward to hearing his take on you know, what we're seeing in with prophecy unfolding, what we're seeing in the Middle East, and any others. I mean, he covers a wide range of news and events and issues, and it's always fun to hear what he has to say and his opinion.
Are you serious? What?
Yeah, are you serious?
Yeah. You know, what a great man. We just love Paul Begley and his wife, Heidi. And don't forget, remember, he was ill when he came back from that trip
from Israel.
Or when he was actually, yeah, when he went, landed in Canada, and he did that, he had that...
It was a vocal cord issue, wasn't it?
Oh, you know, it was a... Well, it was more than that. It was... But I'm glad he's okay. Him and his wife, Heidi, are great people, and we just... we love him to death. We think a lot of him, and he's just a great guy. a lot of stuff going tonight. A lot of things taking place. Folks, by the way, can we talk? Isn't that Joan Rivers?
I guess.
No, Eric said no. Actually, yeah, we'll just sit here and... For those listening without the video, of course you wouldn't get that. Our YouTube channel, look, you know what, folks? So subscribe, please. We're going to be cleaning that up, making sure that everything is current, the playlists are current, that, you know, doing some house cleaning. We really want to get this information out there, and I'll tell you why. Time is short. Joe, time is short. I'm convinced of that. And when I say time is short, I'm not sure how long we're going to have to be able to do this program on the regular venues. Now, I know Global Star is going to be up until the, as my buddy used to say, the last dog is hung. You know, no, I believe that. I believe that Global Star will be out there. You know, the signal will be strong. However, a lot of the millennials apparently like the visuals, right? I'm talking to you.
Yeah, people do like the visual with the audio more so than just the audio.
Yeah, and
unless you're multitasking.
Well, that's true.
You know, like people who are truck drivers or police officers working out of their car or
right.
out of their home, just being able to listen while doing their job or whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
But since we moved to our live show also to a visual venue like YouTube,
yep.
we have seen a high increase of people who watch the show rather than just listen to the show.
And we've got people that actually do both. They'll listen mm-hmm. to Global Star in the background and have the video up. But the reason I mention all of that is not to say, you know, hey, yay us. But here's what we're trying to do in what I feel is kind of the last, I don't know, fourth quarter of the game, I should say. Sports metaphor. What we're trying to do is bring as many people to the truth and also bring as many people to salvation as possible. That's kind of what I'm thinking that we need to do. So how do we do that? We use all of the... We actually use the system of the beast against them. Now... Anyway, but I was it was in the office today in the studio looking around and thinking, my goodness, how far we've come, and it's because of you folks that we've been able to do this, and we're going to even go a little bit further. We will be streaming in full high def, not too long, you know, not in the near future, and using regular television cameras. So you're going to see a difference. But with that, we're also going to have the ability to bring on our guests in video, where we're going to be able to use our screens and our monitors as to show videos, topical videos. And I think that's important, too, because there's going to be a lot of interactions. So think of that in the future. But thank you for all of this. Go ahead. Let's go.
Yeah. This is something that hits home. It's personal. Pastor James David Manning,
yep.
friend of the show. Listen to this. LGBT group seeks to buy building that houses anti-gay hate church.
Yeah, I saw that.
The Outlaw Worldwide Ministry Church, Missionary Church in Harlem, is notorious for its homophobic sermons, according to local Fox 5 New York. It may soon be purchased by an LGBT homeless shelter. Reverend Manning has certainly become fixated on hating LGBT people and trying to use the Bible to justify that, according to the founder of Ally Forney Center. And it goes on from there. The building housing the church is set to become auctioned for unpaid bills.
Wait a second. Which building is it? The pastor's
church
building?
That houses this church. The building that houses this church.
All right. Does he own it?
No. No.
All right.
So the Ally Forney Center is the largest organization in the country working to help homeless LGBT youth. When we broke the news that the building was foreclosed and put up for auction, we launched the Harlem No Hate campaign in less than 2 weeks and were able to raise $200,000 towards the efforts to win the building at auction.
All right.
They go on to say Pastor James David Manning has been at odds with the LGBT community in Harlem for years, regularly putting up anti-gay signs outside his church and preaching homophobic sermons for his congregation.
Right.
Well, congratulations to Pastor David Manning for teaching the Bible. Despite claims that his speech is hateful and incendiary, outlaw signs and teachings are supported by the First Amendment. Yes, they are. And I'm sure no matter what happens with the building, his ministry and following will be just fine. But keep him in your prayers as all this goes on.
Yeah, it's... Now, Greg Jackson is a weekly guest on his radio program.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had Pastor Manning on before, and I've talked to him,
yeah,
you know, on and off there.
Yeah.
In fact, it's interesting because when you had mentioned that, Southern Poverty Law Center. I was just trying to do the acronym here, but they just came out with their 2016 hate groups, and you know, we are dropped off of that for some reason. We didn't make it. Which is kind of surprising. So yeah, apparently we are not doing our job. All right, getting into, and yes, keep Pastor Manning, of course, in your prayers. Getting into the news, of course, Drudge headlining Pope picks fight with Trump.
Talk about this.
Well, did you happen to see, before even that, did you happen to see the Pope lose his temper? Did you see the video of that in Mexico City? Wow.
I heard about that. This was a few days ago.
Yesterday, or time kind of runs together. It doesn't matter. It was, we'll say within the last 24 or 36 hours, he was down in Mexico City, and he was pulled, I believe, into the crowd, handshake kind of thing, and actually struck or pushed against a younger person or a person in front of him, and he just kind of went off on the, don't be selfish, don't be selfish. But the look on his face, have you seen that? That look.
No, I heard about the picture, though.
Oh, boy. It's kind of like, you know,
is it like his predecessor, how evil he used to look?
No, this was an anger, you know.
No, you know that, what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
The guy before him, the Pope before him, he had that face, and when he used to make these angry faces, I mean, he would just look evil. Evil, evil.
Right.
Well, here, I'll pull up and see.
Yeah, we can flash a hope. Well, maybe Eric, if you can find it, it's just a still, even just to show you the look of evil, or not the look, but the look of anger. I shouldn't say evil, the look of anger on the Pope's face. And I get it. All right. However, that's not the best. I mean, one ought not to be that way, especially in public. And I get when you're tired and. We've all been there, right, folks? I mean, I'm a little bit, and I can't talk, but, you know, sometimes things happen.
Was the one before him.
Yeah. But anyway. But now the Pope is saying to Trump, no, it's not Christian-like to build a wall along the border. So here's my question to the Pope and to the Vatican. So the wall that's around Vatican City, what are you going to do about that? What are you going to do about that?
I haven't found the picture.
You know, so anyway, yeah, thrusting himself into the heated American presidential campaign, Francis declared Thursday that Donald Trump is not Christian if he wants to address legal immigration only by building a wall along the border. Well, Trump didn't say that, but that's not his only plan, but he did fire back saying that it was disgraceful for a religious leader to question a person's faith. Now, it's interesting because I'm wondering how the average Catholic out there is going to view Trump now based on this. And this is going to be played. I can guarantee you this is going to be a big deal to all, to the media. And he's going to say Trump is, you know, haters will hate, right? It's going to be the kind of the mantra. But when has, and this is something that I would ask, when has historically the Vatican, or and specifically the office, that's the one, yeah.
Top?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. You can We're talking about ourselves.
It's the Daily Mail UK.
Yeah, it's they did a good job with that. But when in history, when is the last time a pope has inserted or injected himself into a U.S. presidential election?
That was going to be my question.
And I was looking for this earlier today. Now, there was some, with Pope John Paul II in the 60s, there was some, and I'm not talking about a president, an established leader. I'm talking about a presidential campaign. There's a huge difference here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I did go back through, historically, I was looking at things, and I thought, there does seem to be, and I would have to go to the archives, National Archives, to find precisely with what I'm looking for. There seems to be an indication that Pope John Paul II in 1959, may have weighed in on the Kennedy-Nixon campaign, talking about Kennedy referencing his Catholicism. Now, that's the last time I could find, but all throughout, or all since then, I have not seen any occasion where a pope has interjected himself in a campaign with a prospect, a presidential prospect.
And to call, as Trump said, for a religious leader to state whether somebody is a believer or not, based on anything other than unless they were to confess that to them, is out of line. And to say that, you know, if you're only building walls and not building bridges, then you're not a Christian. The Pope has the strictest, you can find it on Drudge, and this has been pointed out many times before, as the Pope continues to try to use his influence in this immigration battle, as he calls for, you know, Americans to embrace, you know, millions of immigrants, as he calls on Europe to embrace millions of immigrants. The Vatican, have the strictest immigration and citizenship policy on earth.
You're talking about
surrounded by walls.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, it's the most hypocritical. I don't know what to compare it to. It's ridiculous. And
well,
the Pope has no business. And another thing that gets me about this Pope, the contraception issue.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody has seen. Well, he's come out and said, well, you know what? Due to the Zika virus, it's okay to have contraceptive because it's the lesser of two evils. He said abortion is a crime, an absolute evil, but that avoiding pregnancy is not concerned about transmitting or contracting the Zika virus. Basically saying you can conform to the world when, you know, you're going to be in danger or when you're in some kind of danger.
Right.
Conformity to the world is okay. We'll take our principles and go home if your life's on the line.
Yeah, what we need is just a bigger rubber band to hold the elastic morals of people. Now, folks, on your screen, if you're watching this on YouTube, on your screen is an image, compliments of the DailyMail.com, of the Pope, and this really doesn't do it justice, I suppose, but we'll leave it there for a little bit. What he's doing is actually saying, you know, don't be selfish, but I understand the reaction, the human reaction to being pulled over someone. What I'm concerned about is the how quickly that his reaction fired up. I mean, we're all human, right? We're all going to get, if somebody, you know, jabs you in the nose or punches you in the nose, you're going to be stunned and act accordingly. Respond accordingly. So, from a human element, a human point of view, okay. But he is the Pope. So, but I was just
even
surprised.
Even candidate Bush told reporters that he supports walls where it's appropriate and that Christianity is between him and his creator.
Yep.
And he doesn't think this needs to be a point of discussion. So, somebody who really hates Trump in the public eye. Kind of sticking up for him there.
And I've never seen such a divide. And we might as well talk about the election just momentarily here, because you've got Cruz and Trump, and you've got Rubio still kind of out there. And of course, you've got Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And Rudd made a big deal about Hillary's coughing spell. What's wrong with her? And people are saying there's something wrong with her. Well, you know, it just seems to me we're missing all of the larger issues here when we're talking about these candidates. We're missing. First of all, we have to understand that I really believe that we're already captured. This nation's already captured. So the people that are in this, and I would dare say, including Trump, do you think for one moment they're going to let him perform his own, you know, his objectives, accomplish his objectives? You know, I don't know. I don't think they will. But my concern primarily is the landscape of this country. And Joe, you can weigh in on this. I mean, regardless of the person going in, my concern is the landscape here, the social landscape, the economic landscape, the geopolitical landscape, the people in power, the objectives of the globalists. We're looking at a situation where whoever walks into that office, let's say it is Donald Trump, don't you think he could go too far the other way, and all of a sudden, you know, we're complaining about offenses to the United States Constitution. We, even though many of the problems that we have right now were created by extra constitutional events or activities, don't you think that we still have to, or we should adhere to constitutional practices or practices that conform to the United States Constitution to fix the problems that we have now? So in other words, what I'm saying is we cannot say the heck with the Constitution. Let's say Donald Trump goes in, gets the nomination and wins the presidency. Let me ask this to everyone listening. Would you back him if he said, we're going to intern all of the Muslims in this country, you know, give them a number and then ship them out?
No.
Okay. I don't either. Because it's not in conformance with the Constitution. We got it to this level, to this area, in these problems by not conforming to or acting in concert with or in subjugation to the Constitution. That's how we got here. We cannot take a shortcut to circumvent the Constitution to achieve our objectives, because that would be the same as what Clinton and Obama and all of their predecessors did,
no,
right?
And he wouldn't even have to do that, because if he were to just actually enforce the current immigration policy, you could take care of a lot of the problems that have made their way into this country by going after people who are here illegally, especially with criminal records who came through after overextending visas or sneaking in the back door.
Right.
Just by enforcing the laws that are in the Constitution, you could get yourself a lot of these people away from what their objectives are, if they have other objectives than to just help build a family, you know, make a family and a living for themselves.
Right. I guess what I'm saying, and I have a book, somebody had sent me a book, they had written this book. In fact, I believe the title is 2016. We've got a lot of books in our office. I've got to find it.
2016.
It had 2016 in the title. It was about a president elected in 2016 as a right-wing conservative benevolent dictator, if you will, or someone who attained the office of the presidency, got in there and worked extra constitutionally to bring the country back under the Constitution, but it had some plot twists and turns. I mean, it was a fictional book, but what you know, the message was essentially, wait a minute, this is still, it would certainly not be a good situation. And it kind of reminds me, the ground on which we walk today, metaphorically speaking, reminds me of the pre-World War II German ground where Hitler was embraced. Because Germany got beat up badly during World War I and subsequent to World War I. So they looked at Hitler as a kind of a savior, right? And isn't that kind of the mindset that we have today, that many of the people have today? They're looking at Trump as a savior.
And they had that, you know, 2012 election.
True.
They've had it in 2008 election. They've had it, and it's as the political, economic, and military problems continue to grow in this country, that's going to continue to increase the seeking out a savior. That type of mentality is going to continue to increase until the false savior makes his way on the scene. Because this is what is being, this is what the road is being paved for.
Well, right. And I'm glad you brought that up because we're looking at the macro picture. And, yeah, I believe truly that time is so short that I do see that things are falling into place that suggests that, we're in the fourth quarter. I guess I don't want to be redundant or even, just continue on this, but I'm just concerned with what I'm seeing the conservative, Christian conservative right in this country really embracing the Donald Trump as a savior. And just to be clear, I want to be clear on this, still working on getting Donald Trump on air. Okay. We might be able to get 15 minutes from him or even 15 to 30 minutes. Still working on that. So it's not a done deal. It's out there. He knows our audience. It's a scheduling issue. So I just want to make sure people are aware of that. But I'm just concerned. And I am concerned about us going too far. Not abiding by the Constitution to fix the problems that were caused by not abiding by the Constitution, if that makes any sense. All right.
Yeah. There's a new financial warning out by Moody's.
Yep.
A few fiscal monetary policy moves left to fight global growth slowdown. Moody's warns risks to global growth have increased since November, and world leaders have little left in their fiscal and monetary arsenals to mitigate the threat, Moody's has warned. It is a quarterly global macro outlook 2016-2017 report released Thursday. The rating agency said that growth prospects were being hammered by China's slowdown and a slump in commodity prices and tighter financing conditions in some emerging markets. This pain would outweigh factors helpful to growth, such as the loss of monetary or the loosening of monetary policy in Europe, Japan, and the U.S., Moody's said. It went on to say that the credit rating firm said gross domestic product growth across the group of 20 was expected to match the 2.6 rate reached in 2015, while only a slight tick up to 2.9% was seen for 2017. The average figure for 2016, however, masked the decline in Moody's forecast range, which dropped 50 basis points both at the top and bottom to end bottom end to sit at 2-3%. Central banks, meanwhile, have limited room to battle the risks looming over growth, the report said, where government budgets are hit by lower commodity prices and depreciating currencies, fuel inflation, room to mitigate the downside risks are limited. In Europe and Japan, elevated government debt continues to constrain fiscal policy, while the efficiency of multiple rounds of quantitative easing has already been tested. And Jerry Robinson on our show last night, FTMDaily.com, FollowTheMoneyDaily.com, talked about this and how the negative interest rates had already started in Japan and how this global, he's never seen the global economies all together as a whole in this downward path that it is going down. He said not in the 2000 cycle, not in the 2008 cycle did he see the trend of so many of the world's economies going down in a spiral at the same time, giving us an opportunity to be in one of the worst financial calamities that we've seen in a long time. Moody's here is backing up Jerry Robinson's evaluation. And to no surprise, I mean, we haven't seen any improvements here. What we've seen is, you know, devaluation of the dollar. The only thing that's helped is gas prices are low, but that comes at a risk to us. It is nice, though, you know, to put $15 in your tank and be able to get it half full or three quarters full. That's something we haven't seen in a while. But beyond that, you know, the prices of things continue to rise, while the value of the dollar continues to sink. You got groceries and energy, food and energy being the two biggest places where people use their money, not considered in the cost of inflation or in the rate of inflation.
Right.
Just like jobless numbers, they came out and said the jobless rate was below 5% at 4.9% in the first time in 8 years or 10 years or something like that. Well, they fail to, you know, count those who haven't been looking for a job for longer than a year, or people who have been out of the workforce for a certain amount of time. It's all, you know, manipulated calculations. Also in this Moody's report, they go on to say that they don't see, without big corrections from economies like China, Europe, and the United States, they don't see how they can get out of this. They say they can, like Jerry said yesterday, tame it and slow it down through quantitative easing programs, not in America, but for places like Europe and Japan.
Right.
But this would just continue to slow the overall collapse or calamity in the economy that we will soon see. And actually make it worse.
Interesting. Now, yeah. This is, Joe, sorry.
Go for it.
Yeah. Well, I was going to lead off with this, but I didn't want to. We were going to lead off with this, but that's, because as things go, you want to make sure that we have all of the facts. Now it appears to be over with and not an issue, but, the UMass, University of Massachusetts in Amherst, there was an active shooting scenario there. It appears that there was a one gunman at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Apparently no one was shot. The authorities or the law enforcement did they're interviewing suspects. There was a shelter in place command. Oh, with joy, right? There was a text that was sent out to all the students here about an hour before airtime, about 6 o'clock p.m. local time, that there was a hostile armed person in Pierpont Hall at the Southwest Residence area, and a handgun was shown but not fired. Bottom line here, it appears that the suspect with a gun is a white male wearing dark colored shirt, gold chain. There was a second person involved wearing a gray sweatshirt. One gun scene. Order for shelter in place was given around 6 o'clock p.m., 6:30 p.m., the school sent out a notification to the school community reminding students again that the shelter in place was not just for the Pierpont Hall, but the entire campus. Word spread throughout the campus very quickly, and that's when we caught it, and it was an active scenario at that point. Now it appears that I don't even want to say it appears that this is over, but the information we're getting right now is the situation has been contained. Now, I just want to urge caution, okay? There doesn't appear to be anyone hurt. There's no shot fired, but it's 7:13, and this is coming from the university now. Please resume normal operations. The university lifted the shelter in place, so I do suspect that in order for them to send out a text like that the situation has been diffused. Again, University of Mass, Amherst location, two males, one gun, scare, you know, but it's been lifted. So, and apparently without any incident. So,
two articles there you go. From nextgov.com.
Yep.
One, what the White House cybersecurity plan says about the Internet of Things. This is something that I've talked about numerous occasions. And I have a YouTube series on the Internet. What is the Internet of Things that I've already written?
Well, what is the Internet of Things?
Outlines for. Well,
because, and I'm serious about this.
There's a different definition in this article. But here, let me do this. Let me pull up my actual.
Because, folks, you might think you know what the Internet of Things is. Because I thought I knew what it was.
Yeah, the Internet of Things
is
basically
technical meaning.
It's the connection of everything. And when I say everything, it's basically
everything.
It's a big smart grid, and you're part of it. So are your appliances.
Right.
Everything's a part of it. And
just to be clear, it's kind of like one phone line with everything connected to that one phone line or one communication line. We're all connected to one another, and that is connected to kind of a, it's like a hive thing, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, is that okay?
Yeah. Let's see here.
And people laughed at, and I got to say this, people laughed at Steve Quayle. They laughed at Alex Jones. You know, oh, your toaster's spying on you, you know? Really? Okay, now it's coming out where, yeah, yeah. Your appliances can pick up your voice, respond to voice commands, whether it's your TV or your thermostat. And this is a big deal with regard, in the north and northeast, it's a big deal with respect to thermostats and heat, controlling the heat. They're and sensors built in the thermos, or sensors built in where they could detect body, you know, movement and bodies in an area. But I don't want to get too deep into that, because I know you've been really working in depth on that. But
well, let's look at what this article says here. Again, from NextGov, nextgov.com.
The White House private site. Private site.
The White House's new National Action Plan on Cybersecurity, released earlier this month, includes a nod to the so-called smart home and the vulnerabilities that could accompany an increasingly connected network of sensors, devices, and appliances. It's among the first time we've seen the White House acknowledge the risks of the Internet of Things that could pose to consumers, and the formal signal of the administration is broadening its view of potential attack targets to include everyday devices, according to Forrester analyst Mark Hung. For the past year, Congress has been convening hearings and discussions related to the Internet of Things, covering various topics including the potential economic benefit to American businesses and privacy concerns for consumers and encryption of personal data. The plan, the White House notes, the Department of Homeland Security is working with Underwriter Laboratories, a security certification company, to create cybersecurity assurance program that could evaluate connected devices for safety vulnerabilities before consumers buy them. These things might include refrigerators, medical infusion pumps, the plan said. It doesn't necessarily mean the White House and DHS plan to devote disproportionate resources to protecting consumers' kitchenware, Hung said. Although attackers, they value their time too, they're going to pick the most vulnerable asset to attack. In most cases, it's going to be people's washers or refrigerators. Hackers may not be interested in hacking a refrigerator, but they may be interested in attacking the president's refrigerator or a Fortune 500
okay.
CEO.
And this brings me to something. I don't know how many people...
I'm lost.
Yeah, I'm lost too. I'm sorry. We just got a message, or you know, a red flashing.
Oh,
message
the invasion of smart appliances.
Oh, okay. Well, get on the air, Eric. I mean, grab a mic.
The smart appliances started a few years back with the new refrigerators, toasters, the lights. They were sending data through I forget what LED type lights.
Yeah,
and you know, now you see the smart TVs and whatnot.
Yep.
I guess it would start with the PC and the laptop, if you really want to think about it, with the microphones and the cameras. Well, actually, the cable boxes used to have the cameras and the microphones in them.
Well,
too,
so. When you say used to,
yeah,
some
they
still,
probably
do,
still do,
and some do under the pretext of making it kind of a telephony. I'm not sure if that's the correct term for convenience. Think of it this way. The convenience of Skype without having to have Skype on your computer, that's just a very basic and broad, that's the way I understand it, all right? But anyway, but when I was looking for, I was looking for a refrigerator, and I was surprised at the level of sophistication. You can't buy a refrigerator anymore that's really just plain. They all are high efficiency, you know, the mm-hmm. HE efficiency, and that come with that are the computer modules that open the door to such backdoor encroachments and spying, if you will. Now, I was surprised when I was talking to one of the salespeople who really knew what he was talking about the level or the possibilities of actually, yeah, of being hacked by or monitored by your refrigerator. As crazy as that sounds. It actually provides a gateway to your wireless network. And think about that. I mean, does it make sense? Of course it does. And it's just like the front end washers and dryers, for example. Everything's high efficiency. it began with the toilets. Remember that? And remember Rush Limbaugh saying, "Oh, you know, the Congress making a telling you how much water you're allowed to have in the toilets." Well, when you take a view from afar of this whole thing, now we're getting into the larger agenda. That was kind of the opening salvo, in a way, of conditioning the populace to accept this control over things, including but not limited to our appliances. And we're being forced into these high-efficiency front-end washers and dryers, which really don't do a good job. I like the old... and my wife is joking, because I do my own laundry, okay? That's what I do. Ringer washer would be good. I don't know how many people are familiar with those. Nobody? Am I too old? Yeah, and the ice underneath the freezer, right, or the refrigerator, the ice block, you know, the ice man cometh. Anyway, but what we're seeing, though, is this reliance on technology for the sake of convenience, ostensibly, but the end game objective here is for a full surveillance state and the tyrannical oppression of the population. So you want to get off the grid, you better just unplug everything.
And I don't have the Internet of Things manual with me. I do have the goals and objectives for electronic health record implementation that deals with the same things, but we're not going to have time to get into that right now. As well as the, I was doing some filing this weekend. These are just guidances on RFID. Yep. Uses and, you know, what these can be used for. I like the coffee stains on this one, but this is a good one. Anybody who wants to read what a Class 2 special control implantable RFID transponder system for patient identification and health information, it's a good place to learn what exactly is a active RFID tag. Can come in the form of a chip, a tattoo, any type of implantable technology that is able to receive and transmit data. That is what they're going for. And they're doing it through things like the Building a 21st Century Digital Government by the White House, or the National Strategy for Biosurveillance.
Yep.
Or even the Department of Homeland Security's Information Technology Infrastructure Services Governance Board. Each agency basically has their own board or department, which puts these documents out, and these documents are the missions. And each document includes basically the same mission statement and vision, which are basically that for the safety of all Americans, they say that they're going to establish for public health, they're going protection and promoting of public health. They're going to develop through voluntary consensus standards and establish safe and effective medical devices, radiation emitting projects, and emerging technologies. Mm-hmm. This will be part of the standards for the world in implementation for utilization of medical devices, innovation, manufacturing, and etc. The medical device manufacturers will encompass all patients, consumers, and the providers will have access to the consensus standards for medical devices and use of the information to protect and promote public health. And as we said, this is all voluntary till the beginning of 2018. But back to the article here, because there's two parts. This is what is the White House doing to prepare for the Internet of Things, and they have a new CISA, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Bill, that was just signed into law in the last few days. And then this report, it says in January, DHS called the startups in the private sector who have technology that can detect devices and sensors in the Internet of Things and also verify or authenticate them. The Internet of Things allows every device, data source, communication link, controller, or data repository to serve as a security threat and be exposed to security threats. Now that's for the cybersecurity part of it, to see where the vulnerabilities lie. The next part of this article is, see something suspicious online? Homeland Security wants to know about it. The Department of Homeland Security wants an extra $1 million to develop the public service campaign designated to increase awareness of online threats. the new initiative will be modeled on the If You See Something, Say Something effort rolled out after the September 11 attacks. The new cyber public service announcement will look to raise public and private sector awareness of cybersecurity and emphasize the importance of cyber awareness in information safekeeping. According to an explanation from the project in fiscal 2017 budget documents released last week, the DHS will work with local and state governments and law enforcement agencies, academic institutions, and private sectors and their companies as part of the campaign, according to budget documents. The original See Something, Say Something first debuted in New York City in 2002 in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. And they go on to say that if you see something suspicious, it could be related to terrorist activity, so you tell a local authority. DHS took campaign nationwide, blanketing airports, train stations, public transportation networks with ads and announcements. Cyber-focused campaign would be smart or small to start, they said. DHS is seeking just $1 million and one full-time employee to administer the program out of the DHS Office of Partnership and Engagement. The proposed staffer would earn a salary of $100,000 a year at the GS-13 or GS-14 level. Remaining funds would be spent on distinguishing and distributing materials, ad buys, and other efforts related to the campaign. Since 2004, DHS has sponsored National Cybersecurity Awareness Month to educate the public about safe online behavior. DHS rolled out cybersecurity-focused public awareness campaign Stop, Think, Connect in 2010, although it is unclear how deeply the campaign penetrated public awareness. And it goes on to say that the United States lacks cybersecurity-focused culture, the report concluding, contrasting U.S. readiness with that of Israel, which has a cultural mindset that it is suspicious of unsolicited emails and is constantly mindful of security. Last week, the Obama administration rolled out a new Cybersecurity Nation Action Plan, which establishes a new public commission on cybersecurity and proposes billions in new funding to upgrade hard-to-secure legacy IT systems to use at federal agencies, among several other steps. So, there you have it.
All right.
Obama rolled out the new Cybersecurity National Action Plan last month.
Interesting. Cyber, see, and part of this, we have to look at the TPP because it's, remember, CISPA, ACTA, and such, and the TPP takes us over, and there's an influence here with the Internet of Things, and so all of this is connected. Just look how fast the TPP has gone off of people's radar. It's just amazing. So we have to really understand that all of these headlines are connected. Now, in case you haven't seen this, and then, folks, I want to get into this real quick here. We had talked about Antonin Scalia, his death. DailyCrow.com. It's DailyCrow.com. Had done a really great job into the research of the deeper, even the numerology meaning of this. And you know, and I want to preface this by saying it doesn't matter if you believe in the satanic, Luciferian, ritualistic things that go on. It doesn't matter. You heard Russ Dizdar when he was on our program, and this guy, and Russ is an expert. I mean, he's an expert at this. It doesn't matter what you believe. If you think it's crazy, yeah, well, that's you. But these people believe in this kind of stuff. It's kind of like a motive for a murder, for example. It doesn't matter if you think that motive is proper. I mean, or if you think it's legitimate, it doesn't matter. Does it matter to the perpetrator? Of course. Well, Daily Crow points a few things out, which I think are very interesting. Antonin Scalia died on the 44th day of the year, which happens to be the start of Lupercalia. Now, if you've never heard of Lupercalia, you can...
Is it to do with leap year?
Well, yes, but it's very ancient, even Roman or pre-Roman festival, surrounds the wolf. I'm not going to get into that, but you can do a search on it. It's Lupercan or Calia. But all of that said, think about this. He died on the 44th day of the year. Happens to be the start of Lupercalia. In leap years like 2016, there are 322 days, interesting number, remaining. The 44 the number 44 keeps piling up and up, and people's eyes begin to gloss over when we get into it, he writes. He writes, it's getting to the point where if you run from the numbers, you're just simply ignoring a massive chunk of the entire picture. And that, to me, that statement right there is so important. You can say, this is all hokiness and stuff, but when you do that, you're closing off a section of the research and investigation and knowledge that should be factored into this. Numbers must be dealt with if you intend to discern the larger tapestry. And there it is. We are looking at, in our view, we're looking at the larger picture, the larger tapestry. So yes, factor in the numerology, factor in things that ordinary, even many within the new media don't factor in. And he writes, it's impossible to keep up with everything. Indeed, it is. More comes out within hours of posting from discerning readers who contribute additional pieces of the puzzle. And this is how we get a lot of our information. People will send us information, and we have the smartest listening audience, I believe, in the entire on the planet. He had done a great posting on this, specifically about the number 44 prior to Scalia's passing. So that he uses that as a point of reference for Scalia. And he writes as well with respect to Scalia and the number aspect of this. You've got to go really deep into it. The Illuminati ritual sacrifice would certainly garner a ton of views, but it would be a deceptive and misleading approach. And I like his reasoned approach to things like this. And I think that we have to be reasoned and we have to be on balance when we look at things like this. There seemed to be a massive number of prophetic events. It's something far deeper than secret societies, all right? Although they do play a part. Now, numbers do play a part, but also names and locations. And folks, really, go to dailycrow.com and take a look at this article and just make it part of your consideration when you think about the larger picture. And I love his term, the larger tapestry, because that's what we're looking at, isn't it? It's a tapestry. Jerusalem captured 44 times in history, the 44th day of the year. And he does note Lupercalia, in parentheses, Calia and Scalia. It's a pagan holiday that in 44 BC added a third college. The address of the resort is Box 44, located 440 miles south of San Antonio. 444, yes. Let me try this again, okay? The address of the resort is Box 44 and located 440 miles from San Antonio.
Antonio. You will get a cookie afterwards.
There's a lot of mispronunciations, a lot of stuttering, but that's just me. And if you don't like
those,
tune out. But anyway, but this is really interesting how the information that he has uncovered and those of his readers as well. Take a look at it. We don't have time to get into it, but please consider this as part of the larger tapestry of things, in his words, beautifully said. And know that, circumstantial evidence, the vast majority of crimes, the vast majority of events, when you look at events, we'll just say a crime. Most people are convicted not necessarily on direct evidence, but circumstantial evidence. And I'll say this, circumstantial evidence is the most difficult evidence to manufacture. For example, you can manufacture direct evidence, and that would be, let's say, a murder weapon. You could place a murder weapon, or you could, we'll say a gun, that fired a fatal shot, a bullet. You can certainly mess with plant the gun or plant a gun or whatever, but the bottom line is circumstantial evidence is the most difficult evidence to manufacture. Having said all of that,
we're going to be right back.
Daily Crow, dailycrow.com.
We're going to be right back after this short commercial break with Pastor Paul Begley. of the coming apocalypse. And I'm going to open the Blog Talk Radio chat room here, as I forgot to do. But Pastor Paul Begley will be with us right here on the other side. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.